Big surprise, it's Biden and Trump in 2024. Uncommitted voted big in Minnesota. San Francisco voted for law and order. Electric vehicles produce more pollutants than gas-powered vehicles. That and a whole lot more on today's Random Thoughts. Hello and welcome to episode number 266 of the Random Thoughts Podcast. Spell that randumthoughts.com online. I am your host, Darren O'Neill, and Super Tuesday came and went. I don't know if it was all that super. Don't think anybody is really surprised about anything. Nikki Haley will finally be withdrawing from the race. And her support of Donald Trump is the only thing that is now in question. Always interesting when these candidates go out within their own party and fight more than a little bit dirty. And then when that's all said and done and they lose, even though they were calling their opponent all sorts of names like 5 seconds ago, all of a sudden it's like, bud, I highly recommend you vote for this person. Does anybody really believe them? But it's something that is usually done for the party unity because the party still wants to win. Nikki Haley, I believe, wants to run again in 4 years. And if she doesn't come out and endorse Donald Trump, I'm not sure that's going to be a possibility for her. So that will be interesting, I guess, to see what she does there. Because party politics is still party politics. As much as having this two-party system causes a lot of issues, it's the one we've got right now. The rematch between Donald Trump, old white guy, versus Joe Biden, another old white guy, going to be funny to watch and infuriating at the same time. Joe Biden has the State of the Union address tomorrow, which if this was Super Tuesday that we just had yesterday, this is going to be Super Thursday, maybe. This is going to be interesting. Not what Joe Biden says. Everybody knows what Joe Biden's going to say. He's done a great job. He's created businesses. He's created jobs. He's made the economy great. So what he says is not going to matter as much as how he says it. Will be interesting to see how the Republicans react. If there's any heckling, catcalling, trying to throw Joe off of his game, trying to get him off the teleprompter, because he's going to be glued to the teleprompter. Absolutely 100% going to be glued to the teleprompter. And the question then is, can he read the words that are in front of him in a way that people will understand? And at this point, that is not a sure thing. I would believe that they're going to have him as jacked up as they can get him. I don't know exactly what that means. Don't know if that means they will be giving him doses of some kind of drug. Don't know if that means they'll be feeding him energy drinks. Don't know what that means to get Joe in a somewhat coherent state for, they need about an hour. These things normally last around an hour. My buddy Larry that I do the Planet Raid show with, which is always a whole lot of fun if you've never checked that out. The language is a little bit worse than you get on this podcast, but it's a lot of fun. He's predicting the shortest State of the Union speech in current history. And I believe that's a pretty safe bet. If Joey comes out and talks for an hour or more coherently, then the right is going to have a lot less ammunition. As crazy as that may sound, one stupid speech, But a lot is hanging on the fact that, hey, Biden's got dementia. Because unfortunately, a lot of people, when it comes down to the independent voters, might not believe yet that the economy is bad because they're being told on MSNBC that it's great. They may not believe that the border, there's no problem at all, because they're being told on MSNBC, including a little stint the other day between Rachel Maddow and Jen Psaki, where they were making fun of the people in Virginia for thinking that there was a problem at the border. No problem at all. There's no problem. They will tell you. This is all a lie. It's all made up. There's really no problem with the massive amount of people coming over the border. It's not even happening. Well, then I want to know why Eric Adams of New York, the mayor, the liberal, ultra-liberal mayor, is like, we can't handle this amount of people coming in. Why the ultra-liberal mayor of Chicago, Brandon Johnson's going, hey, we can't handle this. We cannot handle the amount of people that you are sending us. So who are these people then, if they're not the ones, the criminal aliens coming over the border? Who are they, and how is there not a problem when they come just pouring in at a rate of, what is it, up to 10 million now over the last 3 years that they have encountered, I believe that is? So it's more, because a lot aren't even encountered. A lot just get through without being detained at all, without somebody at the border counting them in, if you will. So these are the kind of things you're going to get. The election cycle is going to get worse. You think it's hard to get accurate news right now? It's going to get worse over the next 8 months, because everything is going to be political, whether it should be or not. A few things that we can take away from Super Tuesday. I was absolutely 100% correct on the last episode when I told you to watch for Minnesota, where we had Michigan the last week that had a bunch of people voting uncommitted in the Democrat primary, which was telling Joey and the Democrats that they didn't like the way they were handling the Israel and Hamas thing. More than 45,000 Democratic primary voters in Minnesota yesterday selected uncommitted on their primary ballots, even surpassing a long shot challenger, Representative Dean Phillips, in his home state. Well, where else would he be running? But this is because they don't like the way Joey is handling Israel. And there is a very large Arab population in Minnesota. So this is absolutely no surprise. The uncommitted vote on the Democrat primary in Minnesota got 18.9% of the total vote, according to the Hill's election tracker. That's a lot of people. So it's going to be interesting to see where they come down when everything hits 8 months from now. Will they vote against Joey? Will they just not vote? And either way, we know where that pushes the final vote. So that's going to be fun to watch. On the ballot in San Francisco, Law and Order was on the ballot. I can't even believe the turnaround they're trying to make in San Francisco, though I think a lot of it is just lip service from a mayor trying to get reelected. Though, as a side note, the baseball team in San Francisco, the Giants, who had a very liberal manager named Gabe Kapler for the last few years or so, he was one that refused to be on the field for the national anthem because, you know, he refused. Well, they hired Bob Melvin to be the manager. Good baseball guy. I mean, I haven't watched in a few years, but Bob was always a good baseball guy, so I'm assuming he still is. He has a simple rule for his players, one that Ozzie Guillen had when he was in Chicago, and that is when the national anthem plays, you will have yourself on the field standing up. He said it's not political. He just wants to show the other team that his players are there and ready to play, which is the perfect thing to say. Kudos, Bob Melvin. I think we all know it's a little bit more than that, but it's a sign of respect for the country that you live in. That's making these players, a lot of them that who were not born in this country, multimillionaires. Bob Melvin wants his players on the field in San Francisco for the national anthem. And if they're not, well, probably not going to play. And it'll be interesting to see how that would, if there's going to be any internal issues because of that, it'll be interesting. But San Francisco, the city itself, outside of the baseball team, passes a couple of resolutions that were on the ballot from Fox News. Quote, San Francisco voters passed a pair of law and order ballot measures on Tuesday night, including one that would require welfare recipients suspected of using drugs to undergo screenings to receive benefits. It marks yet another rebuke of progressive policies in the famously liberal city, it says, following the recall of far-left district attorney Chesa Boudin in 2022. So if you're collecting money as a welfare recipient and you're on drugs now, you're not going to get that money, allegedly. Now, are they going to enforce this? That's going to be another thing. Which is why I said it may all just be smoke and mirrors for London Breed, the mayor who wants to get reelected. This was her idea, putting this on the ballot, because it's like, well, let's see what the people think. And it could also be the fact that she assumed the people were still super liberal and be like, yeah, we love crime. We love drug addicts. Keep giving them money. And maybe this is a surprise to London Breed, but she's making it like, oh, I did it. I did this. I put it on there. And I think this is great. The welfare requirement called Proposition F had 63% support as of Wednesday morning, this morning, according to the most recent results. And another Proposition E expanded some police surveillance powers and reined in oversight, had support from 60% of the voters as of this morning. Granted, there are still votes to be counted, but it looks like both of those are going to pass. London Breed is up for re-election this year. She said, quote, it is clear that people want to see changes around public safety. What's exciting about this for me is I get the kind of tools I need to continue the work we're doing, she told reporters. She added on X, quote, thank you to the voters for passing Prop F to bring more treatment and accountability to San Francisco. This is how we get more people the help they need and change what's happening in our city, end quote. And also said Proposition E gives our officers more tools to do their jobs. Maybe this is a change of heart in a liberal city that was like, oh, let the people do drugs. That's fine. Drugs are cool. And then realized that the people that are so far down the rabbit hole of drugs that they cannot function in society, that are crapping in the streets, that literally shooting heroin in the bus depots and where the BART system, their train systems go. It's not where you want to have your kids. It's not where you want to go on a vacation. It turned into a completely lawless city. And thinking that you're doing the drug addicts any service by allowing them to waste their lives, many of them die because of things like fentanyl, that you think this is something that's good. There's a kind of a disconnect, I think, because for every Willie Nelson that can just smoke pot every day and have his gay old time, there's a lot of people that are doing drugs that they can't handle that are destructive. So the concept of, well, let people just do things if they can handle them, yeah, that's great. That's fine. If somebody can be a part-time heroin and still get their job done, well, that's the pie in the sky that the left wants to believe is possible. The people that live in San Francisco, even though they may be very liberal, I think finally got tired of footing the bill, getting robbed, not being safe, walking down the streets of a very beautiful city. I've never been there, seen a lot of photos of it. Hey, I watched Nash Bridges back in the day. And you can't walk up and down the street because of the crime, because of the drug addicts. Watched a video on YouTube a few months back of a guy walking up and down the main drag there in San Francisco, and most of the businesses were gone. Can't do business where there is no law and order. So the question now becomes, will these propositions passing, will they be actually enforced by the mayor and the judges and the DAs, the very liberal DAs still? Will these things be enforced, and can San Francisco pull themselves out of the tailspin? Or was this just London Breed's thing? Like, well, we'll put it on the ballot. We don't even have to enforce it, but then it'll help me get reelected so I can keep getting my big salary and everything that goes along with it. I guess we're going to have to watch and find out. Now, Dianne Feinstein's Senate seat is open because she passed away. And this is a very interesting race. The way California works, they do voting in a completely different way, where the Democrats and the Republicans are on the same ballots for the primaries. And it's the top two that make it to the main voting coming up in 8 months. But in this case, for Dianne Feinstein's seat, a Republican almost got the most votes. Adam Shifty Schiff still won. At the time of doing this show, he had 33.3% of the votes. I know, it's the magic number, kids. But Steve Garvey, Dodger legend, a Republican, 75 years old, got 32.3% of the vote as of right now. So it was neck and neck between Adam Shifty Schiff and Steve Garvey, making his first foray into politics, but as a Republican, as a guy that is more traditional than Adam Shifty Schiff, no question about it. So they will both move on now to the main election, and that one's going to be fun to watch. I would love to see Steve Garvey take that, because nobody wants Adam Schiff as a senator, do they? In Biden crime family news, this from Just the News, one of the only news sites that is covering the Hunter Biden stuff, because, you know, MSNBC, CBS, ABC, they're all too busy trying to take Donald Trump down than to actually look at the corruption going on from the Biden family. In the article from Just the News, it says, quote, witness testimony from the ongoing impeachment inquiry has indicated there is a key role in the Biden family business dealings that Joe Biden played, showing that his son had access to him to close deals with characters from unfriendly countries. The latest in a string of interview transcripts released by the House Oversight Committee bolsters this claim from Republicans. Jason Galanis, former business partner of Hunter Biden, testified to Joe Biden's special role in their deals, which he described as the, quote, Biden lift, end quote. Galanis, along with another impeachment witness, Tony Babalinsky, claims the Biden name and the perception of influence were key for Hunter Biden to secure deals. The House Oversight Chairman James Comer said, quote, I would say his role, that being Biden, was the person who closed the deal. Hunter and Jim would initiate the deal. They would make their pitch. Their business model was to be able to what I call influence peddle. But what they were doing is selling access to Joe Biden. And then Joe Biden would get on the phone or have lunch with them or do something and make it known in a plausible deniability kind of way that he was involved, end quote. He added, quote, wink, wink, he wasn't really involved. And at the end of the day, the Biden family gets tens of millions of dollars from our enemies around the world, and everyone should be ashamed that our president of the United States has sold access to our two biggest enemies, China and Russia, among other adversarial nations around the world for over a decade, end quote. I think anybody paying attention has heard Joe Biden, seen the clips of him saying he had nothing to do with Hunter's business dealings. Again, Galanis, a partner of Hunter Biden, said, quote, I was present when Hunter called his father on a cell phone and put the call on speaker. Present for this call were Yelena Baturina, an investor in Rosemont Projects, her husband Yuri, the former mayor of Moscow, and Devin Archer. During the May 4th party, we were told to go to an area of the restaurant to gather because Hunter was going to call his father. Hunter called his father and said hello, and hold on, Pops. Then he put the call on speakerphone and said, I'm here with the friends I told you were coming to town, and we wanted to say hello, end quote. Galanis, according to the article, said the vice president delivered pleasantries, and when he was ready to end the call, he delivered a message directly to the son's partners, Hunter's partners. They're saying, quote, okay, you be good to my boy, end quote. That's again what Galanis is saying Joe Biden said on this call, to which Hunter responded, then everything is good and we're moving ahead. Galanis said, quote, I recall being stunned by the call to actually hear the vice president's voice on the phone. It was clear to me that this was a prearranged call with his father meant to impress the Russian investors that Hunter had access to his father and all the power and prestige of that position, end quote. The justthenews.com article then points out only a few days after this gathering, business partner Devin Archer confirmed that Yelena Baturina was committed to a hard order of 10 to 20 million in a Burnham investment banking account. So there seems to be a lot of evidence racking up, multiple people giving the play-by-play, for lack of a better word, Galanis and Babalinsky. And the beautiful thing, unlike all the Trump stuff, is we also have banking records which go ahead and fortify the position that these things actually happened. But again, the mainstream media, not going to cover that because they don't want anything that makes Joey look bad. They would rather have a corrupt Biden than Donald Trump in office because Donald Trump scares the bejesus out of them. And if Donald Trump could just take those sharp edges off just a little bit, he would do himself a lot of good, I believe. Now, moving on to a story that I hinted at quite a while ago. There was a story once we got down to the electric vehicle portion of the laws coming out in this country that are like, we got to get rid of all these gas-powered vehicles. We got to do electric, electric, electric. And we're getting a lot of electric vehicles that are out there now, even though they don't really work when it's cold. They don't really work if they get salt water on them. There's a lot of issues. They might burst into flame. I brought you the story that said the tires are worse for the environment than the emissions that are being released. So even though we're getting down to zero emissions, it's going to be great with these electric vehicles. Well, it's the tires that are the problem and the brakes that are a problem, because every time you accelerate or decelerate, these things are putting off a lot of toxic things into the atmosphere, into the world, into the ground. And this is exactly where they're going. This is not a surprise to me. The New York Post had an article, electric vehicles release more toxic emissions, are worse for the environment than gas-powered cars, according to a study. That was the headline. Again, New York Post, and it says the study published by emissions data firm Emission Analytics was released in 2022, but has attracted a new wave of attention this week after being cited in a Wall Street Journal op-ed. It found that brakes and tires on electric vehicles released 1,850 times more particulate pollution compared to modern gas car tailpipes. which now have efficient exhaust filters, bringing gas-powered vehicles' emissions to a new low. So we now have, with the gas-powered vehicles that we're being told are so bad that we're going to have to stop getting, that we won't be able to buy anymore because they're horrible for the environment. Well, it turns out the overall hit from running a gas-powered vehicle, nowhere near what the electric-powered vehicles are. And that's not even including what you have to do to mine for all the materials that you need for the car, what you need for the batteries. The article says today, most vehicle-related pollution comes from tire wear. As heavy cars drive on light-duty tires, most often made with synthetic rubber, made from crude oil and other fillers and additives, they deteriorate and release harmful chemicals into the air, according to Emission Analytics. They go on to say, quote, because electric vehicles are on average 30% heavier than their gas counterparts, brakes and tires on the battery-powered cars wear out faster than on standard cars. Emission Analytics found that tire wear emissions on half a metric ton of battery weight in an electric vehicle are more than 400 times as great as direct exhaust particulate emissions. For reference, it says half a metric ton is equivalent to roughly 1,100 pounds. Points out that the Tesla Model Y has a battery that weighs 1,836 pounds. The Ford F-150 Lightning pickup, it says, has a battery that weighs in at approximately 1,800 pounds. And the article says the study throws doubt on the practicality of the Biden administration's EV mandates, which tout electric cars as zero emissions in their quest to force 2/3 of new cars to be all electric by the year 2032. And as I talked about when I brought this up the last time, what they want, of course, is tire companies to magically come up with a new formulation for tires that doesn't put off all of this toxic stuff into the world. And I don't know if you think that's an easy thing to do. If you can figure that out, you would be a billionaire, most likely. If you can come up with a compound, if you're listening, you know these things, you can come up with a compound that you can make tires out of that would not release all of these bad chemicals into the environment. Get on that. The article says California's air agency used a model that assumes electric and gas vehicles have the same amount of tire wear when they were analyzing the effects of the gas vehicle ban, according to the Wall Street Journal. The public was quick to note the error, but the agency then doubled down, of course. This is what government agencies do. They doubled down on their stance, saying it was speculative to assume that electric cars will always be heavier than their gasoline counterparts. The batteries for these cars weigh 1,800 pounds. When do you think those batteries are going to weigh less than what 20 gallons of gas are? When do you think that's going to happen? Probably never. Probably never. But this is what you get when you let government deal with things that they have no clue about. They're like, oh, this will be zero emissions. This will be great. Oh, wait, what do you mean that the heavier vehicles, what more wear and tear on the roads? This is why places like New York City having problems with some of those older parking garages collapsing because too many electric cars, too heavy, can't handle it. They are much heavier. And the batteries, that's a problem. They might explode. They might light on fire. Way too heavy. You're putting more stress on your streets. And of course, it's harder to stop those cars because they're heavier. You need more brakes. And every time you brake, you're putting pollutants into the atmosphere. Your tires are putting pollutants into the atmosphere. And since the cars are even heavier, they're putting more pollutants into the atmosphere than a gas-powered vehicle would, because the gas-powered vehicles now are very, very efficient. This is why you do not rush a new technology out there until it's ready. You shouldn't be forcing people to use electric cars or even have that as your goal until they can be competitive. until you know exactly what the effects are of these vehicles on the environment. It's hilarious. When for the environment, we have to do this, and it's the thing that's worse for the environment. It's just like Starbucks. Remember they came out with some new stupid plastic lid or something because people didn't like that they were using straws, and then it found out they were using like five times the plastic to make the new lid than they would have just giving out a straw. This is what happens when morons are in control. Like in New York, for instance. And I just wanted to mention this because it brings a whole lot of things to light about what's going on in this country. You remember the middle finger guy from a couple of weeks ago, which was one of the guys that they said was beating up the cop, and then they arrested him, and when they let him go, he flipped everybody off. Turns out he wasn't the guy. 22-year-old Venezuelan migrant accused of participating in the brutal assault against two police officers in Times Square was exonerated after being mistakenly identified, according to prosecutors. The exoneration, it says, by Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg occurred weeks after Joan Boda was criticized for showing his middle fingers to the press as he left the courthouse on January 27th. After a thorough and diligent investigation, Joan Boda has been cleared as a participant in the assault, the prosecution said in a statement on Friday. Our investigation has revealed that Marcelino St., not Joan Boda, and I'm sure I'm butchering both of those names, is the individual described in this complaint, dressed in a black and white jacket and pink shoes, committing the assault. Marcelino St. has been charged for this in his involvement. Therefore, we will dismiss this complaint against Joan Boda, end quote. So now people took a lot of offense that the guy flipping off the cameras, as I did, believing that it was the guy that beat up the cops that was like, you know, screw you, America, I can do whatever I want. Turns out he was wrongly arrested. And I can understand being a little upset about that. But it puts a completely different spin on things, which is why our media now and the rush to put something out, whether the story has been confirmed or not, is dangerous. It's being used to enrage you so you vote a certain way. Happens on both sides. Propaganda is everywhere, which is why it is important to do what you can to tamp down that initial reaction and be like, well, is this true? Is this correct? Is this story 100% accurate? Who has vetted it? All these things, very important questions. And I believe one of the reasons why you're listening to this show, the Random Thoughts Podcast, I do what I can to provide exactly that. Stories that have been vetted, stories that are based in facts, not just throwing out one side's propaganda in order to get to some kind of political means or whatnot. I'm just here to entertain, hopefully enlighten, give you some information you've never had before, and make you think in a way that maybe you haven't before. This show is a value for value podcast, which means it's not behind a paywall. You get to listen to it each and every week free of charge. And then you get to decide, was this package, was this product worth something to you? And if it was, you can go to randomthoughts.com, randumbthoughts.com/donate, and put a number on it. How much value did you get out of this show? Was it a can of soda pop? That's bad for you anyway. Was it a bottle of water at a White Sox game? What are those up to? $5, $6, $7. Was it a pizza? Was it a Tesla? You get to decide. Share some value back with us. It is all very much appreciated. And I do have a few people to thank for today's show, including Weenie Wawa. Now, there's a great name. $5.65 monthly donation. Thank you, sir. And an even better name, perhaps, Dark Lady D'Azur Demon Dragon, coming in with $5.65 monthly as well. Those aren't their real names. It's a secret. Those aren't their real names. But I can understand. I wouldn't want to put my name on a donation to the show either. That's scary. Dale Jr. was streaming some sats. Dame Slamy was streaming some sats. Redbird Jake W. Redbeard. He's not a bird. He's a beard. He's got a beard. He could be a bird with a beard. Not really sure. Came in with 1,000 Satoshi. Says, I like the rage. Maybe you should start a rage podcast. I have one of those. You know, Planet Rage with Larry Blydner of That Larry Show. I know we got a little worked up on the last show. It was fun. Bill O'Reilly inspired me. I was like, if Bill can still get a little bit testy and cranky, why can't I? It looked like a lot of fun, and it was. And thank you, Jake, for listening and noticing that sometimes the rage is needed. Sir Sean of the Allegheny Valley also streaming some Satoshis, as was Harry Pilgrim. All these people, thank you for supporting the show. You can do it in a variety of ways. You can use the donate button at randomthoughts.com/donate, which will take you to PayPal for a one-time or monthly donation. You can use the crypto. We've got wallet addresses and QR codes. If you want a crypto that isn't there, let me know. But you can do that if you're into the crypto thing. If you're in the podcasting 2.0 ecosystem, you can send us a boost or a boostergram. If you don't know what that is, go to newpodcastapps.com. And if you are over on Patreon, almost forgot about that. Our buddy Brian Janak is over there. He's the one guy left on Patreon. If you want to join him there, if you're on Patreon and you just want an easy way to contribute to the show, that is one way to do it. But thank you, Brian, for being in there now since July of 2020. Time flies when you're having fun, and the monthly donations truly help keep the show going, keep the microphone sounding good, keep the web hosting paid, keep Adobe paid, all these subscriptions and things you have to produce a podcast. They add up. So any little bit of help that you can provide to the show or any of the shows that you listen to, I know the creators greatly appreciate it, because I certainly do. With that said, I plan on being back next week on Wednesday for another edition of the Random Thoughts podcast. Until then, I am Darren O'Neill. Thanks for listening.